south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, wait a minute. Guess what day it is today? Merry Crimble, everyone. It's better to give than receive and hark the Herald Tribune and all that. Or maybe not. However, if you're one of those persons up in the first world that absolutely loves everything about those Christmas holidays, that's another reason to come on down to Latin America and become an expat because, well, Latins celebrate those holidays for about 3 months out of the year, and the rest of the time, when they're not preparing for the holidays, they're spending a couple of months thinking about what they're going to do for their birthdays. Just a little warning about that. Oh, and by the way, as usual, by about Christmas Day, they spent every last penny they've had and they've maxed out every single credit card. That is, people that do have credit cards, which is around 20% of the population. That said, I hope all you listeners up there are enjoying yourselves as you put on a drunk and or a happy face, watching old Vomitland slowly slip into oblivion. That said, down here in Latin America, although the people are much, much happier, 'tis the season to blow every last red cent. And thus, naturally, especially in the big cities in the rotten neighborhoods, petty crime and extortions predictably hit their peak. In fact, just a couple of days ago, I got pulled over at a routine police roadblock, and the cops were trying their best to invent some kind of infraction to hit me with some mordida. That's what they call petty extortion down here. Mordida literally translates into taking a bite. So then, this time of year, around Christmas, what are they looking for? Dope, unregistered guns, contraband, or just a few bucks for gas. And you know, I haven't been pulled over at one of those roadblock stops, I think now for a couple of years. So then, why so many roadblock traffic stops? Well, that's because cops only run on about 2 gallons of gasoline a day, and they can't do high-speed chases that way. Instead, they just go to a busy street, park their cars, and put some cones out on the road, and pull certain people over. And since fresh green gringos have only seen such roadblocks in Hollywood movies where they're chasing armed and dangerous criminals, they really can be very intimidating at first, but you get over it. In fact, some gringos just wave and drive on by, and guess what? Nothing happens. And of course, one of the things you'll first notice is they rarely pull over wrecked, junked, smoke-belching vehicles and chicken buses. Unless, of course, there's been a recent chicken bus accident and made the front page of the paper and a lot of people died. Then, for a week or so, they'll pull over chicken buses. But right around Christmas time, the strategy changes and they start pulling over cars that don't have dents, late models with working lights and seat belts. And why would that be, do you think? Because cops know drivers of those vehicles are relatively high earners. So they're always looking for some violation and will make one up if necessary. And if you don't pay up in cash, then, well, they'll hold you for a half an hour or an hour, finally letting you go, of course, but they know that'll ruin your schedule for sure, and you're likely to pay the 15 or 20 bucks that they're hitting you for, just to get on with your business. So bottom line, if you get pulled over right around Christmas, what's your time worth to you? And note, if this happens on the gringo tourist trail, like, let's say, slightly out of San Jose, Costa Rica, on your way through the boonies, it'll probably cost you around 100 to 200 bucks to get out of a situation like that. Whereas, off the gringo tourist trail, a Christmas extortion stop like that might only cost you 10 or 20 bucks. Now, before I tell you the rest of that story, let me read a related email. It's from Dave, who's got something to say about extortion in Colombia. He starts by saying, Feliz Navidad, Don Johnny. Hope you're doing well. I imagine you're pretty busy preparing for your next seminar. Wish I could be there for it, but we'll be in Colombia visiting my wife's family. Okay, just a little comment here. Me, Johnny again. Now, you have to know that Dave, being married to a Colombian, he knows a hell of a lot about what's going on in Colombia and the subtleties and peculiarities of the people in that region. Though all Latin countries are much alike in many, many ways, they all have peculiarities and subtleties of their own. Things that us gringos only find out if we hang around with the locals quite a bit, or, as in Dave's case, marry one. So his email says, I'm forwarding this article to you because it reminded me of a potential show topic I've been meaning to send to you. Your thoughts, Your experience is about extortion and micro-extortion in Latin America and how it affects gringos and their personal and business lives. So, Johnny, I've heard you talk about extortion a few times before. A show about getting extorted while riding a chicken bus comes to mind, but I don't remember you ever mentioning any impact on you or other gringos from criminal gangs. You do mention, of course, police and government official bribes frequently, but do gringo business owners experience this? What about gringo non-business owners? Anyway, here's an article about a Christmas micro-extortion scheme that's going on in a large city that's part of the metropolitan area of Barranquilla in Colombia, where my wife is from. Hopefully, I won't get hit up for cash in her neighborhood next time we're down there this New Year's. And then Dave ends that nice email by using the A-word on me. He says, "Stay awesome, Johnny," followed by a typically Colombian street phrase, "Y cuelga suave," which typically on the streets of Colombia means take it easy, but literally means fornicate smoothly, which seems to be a compliment, right? So you don't want to walk into a conservative Colombian's house and toss that term out when grandma's around. Okay, Dave, I'll read a few excerpts now. Now, this article really drives one particular point home to listeners out there, that safety and security is all about where you choose to live, work, and play in Latin America. It doesn't matter if you're in the big city, a small town, the burbs, out in the boonies. You have to come down, get your boots on the ground, check it out for yourself, and ask around. For example, Dave mentioned there in his email my Latin Insider Seminar. If you come down for the seminar, you'll see on the very first night at the meet and greet, we hand out a little delineated map of Guatemala City showing the city's 25 zones or districts, with shaded areas showing where it's safe day and night, other areas showing where it's safe just during the day, still other areas not recommended for gringos to blunder through at all, etc., etc. Now, I'm assuming that the vast majority of gringos coming down who listen to this show will make an effort to keep a relatively low profile, meaning no Rolex, no rings, designer clothes, high-end luggage, gold teeth, whatever. Because, you know, these days in any country, if you do that, you're just asking for trouble unless, of course, you've got bodyguards. So the reality is you could take any big, dangerous city in Latin America and live a very nice, safe, comfortable life. But it'll take some boots on the ground preparation and investigation beforehand to locate the most ideal places for expats. Now, some of the most dangerous cities in Latin America, according to press reports, would be San Salvador, El Salvador, Guatemala City, Guatemala, Tegucigalpa or San Pedro Sula, Honduras, Lima, Peru, Bogota, Colombia, just to name a few, and for that matter, practically any city in Brazil or Venezuela. Now, aside from those two failed states, about a third to a half of all the neighborhoods in any big Latin city are perfectly fine for gringos and expats to live in. On the other hand, of course, that means about half the neighborhoods in any big Latin town or city are really not recommended for expats and gringos. Again, there's no substitute for boots on the ground. Okay, that said, let's talk about extortion and what it means to you as expats and gringos. Now, you might remember around 2 years ago or so now, I think, I talked about a guy who came down to one of my seminars, a guy who is from Central America originally, but escaped with his mother to the States when he was just a wee kid. So he would be one of those guys who slipped in very young as an illegal alien and became totally 100% Americanized. Because, you know, back then, nearly every president from Reagan to Carter to Clinton, even Bush Sr., had amnesty programs for Latins who lived in the country illegally for a long, long time and proved themselves to be decent citizens and all that. So anyway, this naturalized U.S. Latin guy came down to my seminar because he saw what we all see, that the U.S. is slowly deteriorating and corroding beyond all recognition. Anyway, what this guy didn't tell me was that he inherited some land in Central America, in the big, bad city of Guatemala. And so he came to the seminar. After the seminar, took possession of the land, started a thriving business, was making money, until, bada bing, the extortionists came knocking on the doors of the neighborhood businesses. Now, I'm sure you're thinking, if you never heard this story before, Guatemala City must be a terrible place for gringos and even worse place to do business. So let's cross that one off our list, huh? Well, not so fast. In the end, when the whole story came out, it was discovered he inherited this land in a district next to Guatemala City called Misco. M-I-X-C-O. Misco. As it turns out, of all the 22 states or departments in the country of Guatemala, and of all the designated 338 municipalities, that municipality called Misco, M-I-X-C-O, is the second most dangerous place in all of Guatemala. Now, don't tell me this guy didn't know that. I mean, his family comes from that area. It's just that, you know, you get some free land and you think, hey, very low startup cost, right? I'll give it a shot. So, the moral of that story? Well, I think you know the moral of that story. You always want to choose between the safest, most secure areas in any Latin country you plan on expatting to. I repeat, the only way you're going to find that out is if you have boots on the ground. Okay, then let's talk about Barranquilla and the suburbs of Barranquilla, Colombia. Now, you may have heard of that city, Barranquilla, because with every passing day, it's becoming more and more known to gringos and thus somewhat on the gringo tourist trail. International Living, Sovereign Man, and a lot of first world retirement websites and rags are pushing it heavily. And note, since Barranquilla's got about a million or so people, you've got a lot of choices, a lot of neighborhoods to check out. So you can, if you're not careful and you don't keep your eyes open, end up with a bad experience, which is why you need adequate boots on the ground beforehand. That said, listen to this article, and I'll translate here. This is an article from December 21st, 2015. What's that? A couple days ago. Being that this kind of news comes out of local newspapers, articles like these almost never make their way into the first world media, especially since they're in Spanish, which only reinforces the fact that you should go online yourself and check out the local newspapers in the area you think you want to expat to. And if your Spanish sucks, paste articles into Google Translator. Soon enough, you'll get a very good idea of what's going on in that neck of the woods. But don't get discouraged if the articles and the media reports seem kind of second-rate and sophomoric, as if it came out of a high school newspaper. There is a lot of that. However, no matter how bad local Latin media sucks, mostly in their presentations and production values, by the way, that said, they're not owned by six huge media conglomerates. Like, guess who? Which is good, actually. So, what passes for media down here is owned by hundreds of small families, corporations, and individuals. Like it was back in the States in the 60s and 70s. Until big companies like Turner, Time Warner, and Disney started buying everything up. So as the media goes down here in Latin America right now, all the various magazines and newspapers and radio and TV are splintered. Bottom line, they're extremely jealous of each other and not against a little sabotage here and there. Sure, 95% of the programming is embarrassingly bad. Still, they're mostly individually owned and there's no guiding hand telling them what to do. All right, finally, I'll read the article. It starts, Barranquilla neighborhoods are being plagued by neighborhood extortionists asking homeowners for an average monthly protection payment of 20,000 pesos per month. Then it says the neighborhood bad boy gang, the Costeños, are calling this the Christmas vaccine. In other words, you pay the weekly extortion and that's the vaccine so you don't get sick. Ha ha. Now, here's the interesting part. It all started about a month ago, on November 21st, when two adjacent neighborhoods were having a community action committee at their local community action headquarters. Oh, and by the way, if you're wondering, right now, one U.S. dollar equals 3,308 Colombian pesos. So that 20,000 peso a week extortion figure equals about $6 a week. I know it doesn't sound like much, but once they get their foot in the door. So how'd it happen? How'd the gangsters get the word out? Well, at that meeting, a guy stood up. He announced the vaccination plan for the month of December. Then he said collection days would be on Sundays. Homeowners could expect a regular visit from a guy with a gun in his waistband. In Chicago, he'd be the bag man. Oh, and get this, the gangster that was setting down these new rules was a man named Poopy. Probably got his ass kicked a lot as a kid, huh? A guy who was not only under house arrest at that time, he was wearing an electronic monitoring bracelet too. So you gotta wonder how this guy managed to get in and out of his house and evade the technology. Then the article goes on to say these so-called Christmas vaccines in certain neighborhoods are nothing new. Witnesses report that in certain neighborhoods of Barranquilla and Soledad, home extortions restricted to the Christmas holidays are well known. So then what's changed? It says that for many years, a criminal gang known as the Rastrejos had been forcing weekly extortion payments out of merchants and business owners But until just recently, the extortions did not extend to normal residents and homeowners. They were just nailing the businesses. Along with that, there's another type of extortion tax in certain Colombian neighborhoods, specifically aimed at people who don't have driveways or garages and must park their vehicles on the street. And if you don't pay that weekly tax, one guess to what happens to your vehicle. And the fees? About 3,000 pesos for a motorcycle. That's a buck a week. Twice that for cars. Again, not much, but extortion is extortion. Now, in some of those same neighborhoods, if you happen to do business with a car, motorcycle, or tuk-tuk, you'll have to pay protection money to a gang member once a week, too. And speaking of tuk-tuks, if you don't know what they are, they're those three-wheeled open-air taxis that look like a cross between a golf cart and a genetically engineered cockroach. Now, rumor has it, the tuk-tuk was first invented by an insane lawnmower mechanic from India, who most gringos and expats feel should be in hell for all eternity, strapped to a truckload of burning tuk-tuks. Because, you see, unfortunately, little by little, they're multiplying like locusts, invading so many of our small, laid-back, little Latin towns and cities. It's a shame, really. Now, of course, expat Eddie weighs in by saying there's hope on the horizon. He says, tuk-tuk drivers and chicken bus drivers are natural enemies. They hate each other because, well, they're competing for passengers and road space. And believe me, on major congested highways, tuk-tuks are so much smaller and maneuverable than chicken buses. When observed from the air, that would be with a camera on your drone, right? They really do look like a bunch of red ants ready to sting a big old clumsy wasp and haul it off to the Queen's chambers. So, like expat Eddie says, if we could somehow touch off that inevitable war between militant tuk-tuk and chicken bus factions, with any luck they'll wipe each other out and we'll all be better off for it. That said, if only some smart person, maybe another lunatic lawnmower mechanic from India, could find a way to send all those millions of stinky, polluting 65cc motorbikes to rice burner heaven, that's when we'd really be in paradise down here in Latin America. But I digress again. Getting to be a habit, huh? So anyway, bottom line on the personal extortion bit, it's evident you just have to get boots on the ground before you ever do anything permanent down here or semi-permanent, like sign on to a long-term rental contract or start a business, buy some land, build, or even go biking or jogging. And the thing is, there are plenty of very, very safe places down here. Then again, there's always some bad rumor going around. Everyone's heard one. And it's the people down here who have nice, calm, uneventful lives that never talk about it. Like good old expat Eddie says, a long-term expat down here who's owned many restaurants. He says if you find a fly or a hair in your soup, you'll tell 10 people. However, if you have a good or even superlative experience in a restaurant, you probably won't tell anyone. Okay, let's get back to the story I started telling earlier in the show. I got stopped by the cops at a roadblock for the first time, I think it is a year and a half or 2 years now. They didn't single me out because I was a gringo. I'm off the gringo tourist trail and, well, there's not many of us. But they were singling out fairly nice cars that weren't trashed out pieces of dung like about 80% of all the other cars on the road. So then, why weren't the cops pulling over obvious shit boxes? Well, there's no money in it. After all, it's the Christmas season. The cops are broke like everyone else. It's a week or two before Christmas and they've yet to buy presents for the kids, the wife, and the mistress. So to set the stage, I'm on the Pan American Highway, you know, the big one that goes from Alaska all the way down to Panama. I'm in Guatemala because just in a week or two, I'm doing my Latin Insider seminar. We're way out in the boonies, probably 30 or 40 kilometers from the nearest big city. And suddenly you come around the curve, you see about 10 orange pylons in the road. And there are three or four pairs of cops with clipboards flagging down decent looking cars and leaving the junkers go. So I pull over and the two cops come to the window and they ask me for my license and the car papers and I said, habla inglés, meaning do you speak English? And both of them shook their heads no, so at that moment I had to make that quick decision as to whether I was going to speak in Spanish to them or play the clueless gringo act. Right then I decided on that no hablo español route since one of my passengers was the famous Captain Mango. And he could easily help me out in that department because his Spanish sucks and he's very convincing at it. So then you might ask, why does the Clueless Gringo Act achieve so much success with the cops? Well, when you're off the gringo tourist trail and the cops don't speak English, they get totally frustrated after a while and often just wave you on. Now, the other passenger of the car was a beautiful Latin lady. She quickly realized these guys were scammers out for dough, out to get a little extra Christmas money. She was the first to notice they did not have badges or ID numbers or name tags on their pockets. However, there are enough cops and cop cars around to make it look like an official operation. They had clipboards and ticket books, but oddly enough, no IDs or radios for that matter. So anyway, I gave the little guy my driver's license and car registration. So far, so good. And then the guy said, passport, please, which is an unusual request. Now, you might think that that's normal, but you'll find if you're down here long enough, if you ever get pulled over by a cop for a legitimate traffic violation, like going the wrong way down a one-way street. Oops, scratch that. Bad example. Everybody does that. Anyway, all they want to do is see your driver's license and the paperwork that shows the registration is up to date and the license plate's renewal fee paid, of course. So this guy asked me for my passport. Now, I knew in that moment that wasn't normal, but hell, why not? So I dug in my secret pouch, making it not so secret anymore, and he looked at the copy of my passport. He took my license and the car papers, walked over to his perpetually grinning, goofy-looking partner, who appeared to have not quite enough brain power to stand up, hold a clipboard, and maintain loose control of his vital sphincters at the same time. Meanwhile, there were a half a dozen little indigenous kids running around, some asking for handouts, others trying to sell all kinds of junk to us, the captive audience. Yep, they had Coca-Cola, nuts, chocolate, and handmade rustic manger scenes. How about that? Well, it is Christmas, you know. And every traveling gringo definitely does need a manger scene in the front seat of his car, complete with the miniature goats and the cows and the driveway chickens and the three wise men, of course. Hey, got mine. Won't leave home without it. So then, the little cop walked back over. And he was little, barely came up to Captain Mango's gazotes. The one stupid cop who had all he could do to keep his sphincters in check seemed like he just wanted to call it a day. Then the other, more persistent guy had a look in the car, in the glove compartment, the console, under the front seat. And you know, he couldn't fail to notice I had a wine bottle stuffed in the passenger side door and a Bailey's Irish Cream bottle in the driver's side door compartment. So then he's thinking, hey, we'll get this guy for drunken driving. And he says, breathe in my face. And I did, and he didn't fall over, so I guess I passed the test. But you know, I can't blame him there for going after the drunk driving thing. What does he know about us expat gringos and the way we carried bottled water with us around in glass bottles? Nope, not plastic, not acceptable. And you know, a nice, convenient, thick glass bottle is a wine bottle or a liquor bottle like Bailey's Irish Cream. And you know, these days it's getting harder and harder to find heavy-duty glass bottles with a screw-off top that can take a beating. Meanwhile, the short, more aggressive cop comes up with the bright idea that my passport copy hasn't been certified and notarized. So then why didn't I carry my original passport? Well, the fact is I almost never do unless I'm crossing borders. Even the U.S. State Department website says don't carry your original passport, carry a copy. Doesn't say anything about a certified copy. Now, to get a certified copy, you have to go down to a lawyer and pay him $10 or so, and he'll put a bunch of colorful, funky-looking stamps and seals on there and sign it. But I assure you, it's not necessary when you're just walking around Latin America or driving, as long as you've got a valid driver's license. And like I said, it doesn't even have to be valid, because Latin cops, off the gringo tourist trail anyway, don't know how to read a lick of English and are just looking to see that the picture matches your ugly mug. So after about 10 minutes in the huddle and not finding anything in the car, they decided they were going to create a new kind of violation that said that your passport needed to be certified and stamped. And of course, I understood what they were saying. They were saying it needed to be authenticado, certificado. And I said in my most horrible Spanglish, no es necesario, Gomer. A crude but understandable phrase in both Spanish and English. And at that point, I called for Captain Mango's assistance. And when his imposing 6'4" frame edged out of the car, it seemed he was now in the land of munchkins. And I asked Captain Mango to hand over his passport copy. So he whipped it out, and guess what? His was not certified either. Obviously in violation of the brand new law that Barney and Goober just created. Then I handed it to the cop and said in my worst Spanglish, The copy of the Pasaporte Gringo Grande here, no certificado either. So now, the little guy had a problem. Two gringos on his hands without certified copies of their passports. And that's when our third passenger, that beautiful Latin lady, rolled her window down and started bitching at these guys good. She said, in perfect Spanish, of course, she said, "This whole thing is illegal. You guys don't even have badge numbers or names." Then she took a pen and pencil and said, "I want them right now. What's your name and your badge number?" Of course, they backed off of that immediately, and one said to the other, "She really knows the rules, doesn't she?" Then they asked for her ID and asked her to step out of the car. Well, as it happened, it was her car in her name, but she didn't step out. She said to him, "Look, I know the rules. You have to have a lady cop on the premises here, or I don't have to get out of the car." Well, at that point, she really had these cops by the short ones. And they told her they were going to fine her for being abusive. At which point she said, "Go ahead, but when you write out the ticket, you'll have to put your name and badge number on it and give me a copy. Then I'm going to report you." So while she's browbeating them through the window, I got on my little dumb phone and called my local Latin lawyer. I explained to him the situation in English, and he said, "No, you don't need an authenticated copy of your passport. That's not necessary. However, if you want to come down to the office someday, I'll give you an authenticated copy, and then they won't pull that crap on you again." And I said, "Yeah, but that's not helping us right now. Listen, I'm going to hand this phone over to the cop, and you read this guy the riot act, okay?" And he said, "Sure thing." They spoke for about 3 minutes, and he handed the phone back to me, and my lawyer said, "Easily solved. Just have the young Latin girl drive the car. You won't have to pay any money, you won't get a ticket, and those guys will save face." So, that's exactly what we did. All told, we were there about a half an hour, dickering back and forth with those cops. And finally, when we were on our way, our Latin lady passenger said to us, "The nerve of those cops wanting to stick you guys for $20. Then Captain Mango said to me, $20? Is that all? Why didn't you tell me? I'd have paid them." And that, my friends, is how things could go for anyone, especially around Christmas time when the cops are hurting for dough. Now, there are a couple lessons to be learned from that little incident. One, you got to have a lawyer, one that you can call right away just in case. Number two, often it really does pay to play the dumb gringo, especially when you're off the tourist trail. Number three, sometimes it's best just to wave at the cops and drive right on by. A lot of gringos do, and they get away with it too.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.